This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. And now, here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Chad Campbell, Andrew Flanagan, Jeff Machado, and Keith Schmidt.
Talking swamp sweating. That's for the bathtub full of sweat.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Lounge. It's been about 10 days since our last trip to the Sports Lounge, and quite a bit's gone on in the world of sports, and we can't wait to bring it to you. So the lounge is a little light tonight. I think a lot of people are, you know, off on vacation in the summer, can't get them to come hang out in the lounge, but the diehards are certainly here. So in the lounge tonight, we have myself, the cowboy, Roger Morissette. We have Jeff Machado, Keith Schmidt, and we have a special guest for everyone, Cowboy Senior, also Roger Morissette, and my father and my best bud. So how you doing, Cowboy Senior?
All right, I'm just lounging here with the boys, ready to talk some sports.
Absolutely. So to give you some of Cowboy Senior's background, he's really the Swiss Army knife of this group. You know, he master pretty much everything. Kind of taught me everything I know about sports, and I'm real excited to have him on, and it's gonna be fantastic. So without further ado, the cigar smoke is thick, the music's playing, everybody's got a little drink, and the ladies are looking nice. So let's kick back on the couch and start the Sports Lounge. What we have in store for you tonight are a preview, first of our series of NFL previews. We're going to be going division by division, very similarly to how we've been going in Major League Baseball. And we're going to start things off with the AFC West, home of the, at least around these parts, home around of the hated Denver Broncos, Kansas City Chiefs, San Diego Chargers, and Oakland Raiders. We're going to then come back with the last of our division reviews in Major League Baseball, which is the National League West, Dodgers, Giants, and three steaming piles of crap. And one more break, and then we're going to talk about MMA as we do on all the shows. So I'm the only MMA expert that'll be in the lounge tonight, but everybody else can chime in, and I can't wait. So everybody ready to get going?
Ready. Big time. Let's do it.
All right. So starting things off tonight, we're talking about the AFC West. This will be the first of eight division previews that we're doing for the NFL. So the AFC West, last year, standings were Denver, 13-3, Kansas City, 11-5, San Diego, 9-7. All three of those teams made the playoffs. Only division in football that had three teams make the playoffs. And then the lowly Oakland Raiders, who I'm sure Jeff Machado will pick to win the division, came in at 4-12. So
it's Matt Schaub.
Big Matt Schaub guy. So all these teams have done made a number of moves in the offseason. And I figure we'll start things off just talking about the Broncos and some of their offseason moves. So they really shored up the defense. They added DeMarcus Ware, TJ Ward, and Aqib Talib. So I guess we'll start with Jeff. Jeff, what do you think about what the Broncos did this offseason and kind of where they're at least defensively coming into this year?
Well, as a Patriots fan, it's very sad to see Talib going over there. I mean, I think that's a pretty big deal, just him alone. The defense is definitely going to be a lot better, but the big story with them is the offense. You know, losing Eric Decker is huge. Is Von Miller still going to be taking steroids, or is he going to play this year? Miller plus Talib, that makes him pretty formidable.
Yeah, that's
my early thoughts.
Absolutely. Cowboy Senior, how do you feel about like the DeMarcus Ware and maybe Emmanuel Sanders filling in for Decker? You think he can do an admirable job? What do you feel about Denver in general, Cowboy Senior?
Well, I certainly don't worry about their offense. Even without Decker, they have plenty of weapons, with Demaryius Thomas being still their number one receiver. Julius Thomas, very solid at tight end, with another guy behind him, Tammy, who's a good pass-catching tight end. The little guy, Welker, working the middle is always real good. They're kind of every once in a while running game with Monte Ball will work. And Emmanuel Sanders, yeah, no, he's not Eric Decker, but he's not bad. And Peyton certainly has enough places to distribute the ball, and he's good enough to do it. The big question with them is going to be their defense. They ran it all the way last year until they ran into that real super physical team. And like we've had experience that with us in New England, where we've had some great offensive teams, and then they ran into a real physical giant team in the Super Bowl and couldn't overcome it. So they did do some things to address the defense, like you guys were saying. The Marcus Ware coming off one edge, Von Miller coming off the other, should allow them to get a little more pressure on the quarterback. Certainly Tlaib will help a lot in coverage, and Ward, a good hitting safety, will help them. As far as what Jeff said, I got to just throw this in as a Patriot fan. We really don't feel that bad about losing Tlaib, because we went above and beyond in replacing him with Revis Island. They can have Tlaib, because as we know Tlaib's history, they'll get to the biggest game of the year in the playoffs, and he'll just roll over and go down like the wuss that he is. So that there's no doubt that this team's going to go far. There's one question, obviously. There's one thing that could completely debilitate him, and that's if Manning went down. All of a sudden, the offense wouldn't look so great with Brock Osweiler calling signals.
Absolutely not. And that's the kind of fair and balanced analysis you can come to expect here on,
Tlaib is a wuss.
On the Sports Lounge. Yeah. Cowboy senior, ornery Patriots fan. We will definitely have to bring him back for the AFC East preview. Keith, what are your thoughts? So maybe dive in a little deeper on Denver, kind of.
I agree with mostly everything Roger said, the Cowboy senior. Peyton is the key. If he's upright, stays healthy all year, they'll be in the AFC Championship game, playing the Patriots.
And more fair and balanced analysis here on the Sports Lounge. I happen to.
Tlaib versus Revis. Let the two guys go out there by themselves. It'll be fine.
I happen to agree that those two teams are probably the class of the AFC. At least, I mean, in football, you never know. As we all know, one injury can derail a season. But I think it's pretty clear those two teams are the two teams to beat in the AFC. As far as Denver, just my own personal opinions, I'm going to disagree with Jeff that they're going to miss Decker. I think Decker very much is a product of that system. I think he's an okay. I think he was good as a number two receiver going to the Jets, where he's going to be the one. I think you're going to see, and without having Peyton Manning throwing him the ball, I think you're going to see that he is he's pretty average. And I think Emmanuel Sanders might actually be a better fit for that offense, given Decker and Demaryius Thomas sort of they do some of the same things. They're both pretty good sized receivers. Sanders is a quick, fast, take the top off the defense kind of guy who Manning's going to absolutely love having him to throw to. So I actually think their offense is going to be better. I think Monte Ball is just flat out a better player than Knowshon Moreno. His issues last year, the reason Ball didn't get a lot of reps at the beginning of the season, were due to his pass protection, which as the season wore on, he became better and therefore got more reps. And I saw the stat. He averaged like 7-point-something yards to carry over the last so many weeks. So I think their running game is going to have more punch than they did with Moreno. So Denver, clearly the class of that division. Of course, the Manning injury, the neck woes pop up. I mean, that completely sinks them, I don't think. It's something I don't really understand, and maybe you guys could throw some color on this for me. If your whole team is predicated on surrounding this one great quarterback with all these weapons, right? And so they have the best offense in football, all these weapons. Why wouldn't you pay to have a decent backup quarterback, to have a decent veteran backup quarterback? Like, I mean, even the Cowboys who, you say what you want about the Cowboys, but they paid for Kyle Orton. They didn't have to use him, and they used him the last game of the season, and he filled in admirably. It just doesn't make sense to me that you have a Porsche offense and then a Hugo backup quarterback. Anyone want to chime in there?
I think it's simple. They can't afford it. That's the bottom line. They sink all their money into those stars. When those stars go down, they're filling in with third-string players. Not just that quarterback. All of their positions. They pay Demaryius Thomas big bucks, right? Sanders probably got a decent contract.
When
those guys, if those guys go down, who's coming in to replace them?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, the other thing is, their offense is so pass-oriented, so predicated on Manning distributing that ball around, that even if you had, quote, what would be a good backup quarterback, there's no backup that's going to run that offense and take this team to the promised land, because they're built on, we're going to throw the ball around and we're going to score a lot of points, and that's how we're going to beat you. And an average quarterback isn't going to get that done. It's got to be a superior quarterback, and that's Peyton. And the whole thing with them is that if Peyton stays upright, they're going to roll through the regular season. The question is, when they get to the playoffs and a team gets physical with them, when the officials call the game, especially getting physical with the receivers, it suddenly becomes a completely different football game in the playoffs. You now can manhandle the receivers where you can't touch them in the regular season. The statistics on the hitting a defenseless receiver penalties and pass interference penalties were, like, I think less than 20% flags thrown in the playoffs than there were in the regular season. So that's going to be what they, if they stay healthy, that's what they're going to have to overcome is, can they win against a team that can really bash them around and they won't have flags thrown all over the place to protect them? In the regular season, they're a juggernaut. Their offense is so good, and the way the game's officiated in the regular season, I think you can almost count on them having home field all the way through the playoffs as long as Peyton stays upright.
Yeah, and I mean, to piggyback on that just a little bit, I think what really shows up in the playoffs with Manning is his after the surgeries. I mean, he's the most accurate quarterback in football, but he can't really throw the ball too well more than 30 yards downfield. So they can, you know, they play, you know, that Seattle played, you know, the old Belichick style against the Manning's Colts. You know, just let them catch the ball and then just beat them up, and it's. Yeah, it's a good point, but I think with what they've done on defense, the reason they did this on defense is so they can win a 17-14 game in the playoffs, as opposed to, you know, winning 42-0 in the regular season, but then getting smoked because their defense sucks in the playoffs and they can't, you know, they finally run into someone they can't score against.
I'll tell you, they're gonna put some quarterbacks out of some games this year. When they have a 21-point lead and Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware can just pin their ears back and attack, that's going to be something to see.
Yeah, they're tough. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we look for flaws, but it's, and every team has some flaws. That's just the way the game is. They obviously don't have many. They're a really good team.
Absolutely.
Much as we all hate to say it, they are a really good football team.
Here on the Sports Lounge, as we as we review these teams, we're looking for positives and negatives for all the teams, and not specifically looking for Denver's flaws. Just to clear that up.
That's the Patriots' prime competition. That's what it is. Let our bias out there.
So, Jeff, any funny?
It feels like out of the four of us, I'm the least, most, you know, voracious Denver hater, and I feel like it's pretty easy for me to find flaws. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like we're going to find that the mailman and his saying that Manning is going to miss Decker over the course of the season is going to come to fruition, and you guys are going to be thanking me because, I don't know, you're talking about Demaryius Thomas. If they're the same player, then how come one needs the other to compliment him, but he doesn't? You see what I'm saying?
They're not the same
player. Emmanuel Sanders is going to come in, and Demaryius Thomas is going to catch 100 passes? I don't think so.
Hey, you know, Jeff, and that you're a guy who's not afraid to throw your opinion around, and that's what the Sports Lounge is all about. We appreciate that. You know, all of this stuff is recorded, and, you know, we're going to play snippets of it throughout the season. So when Denver struggles to an 8-8 record, even though Peyton's healthy because Emmanuel Sanders is terrible and everybody's triple teaming Demaryius Thomas, we're going to play this, and you're going to be the genius. So we appreciate that.
I don't even need to listen. I already know.
He's
got to carry for Monte Ball. He's not going to get on the field. He can't hold it.
So one last thought. Defensively, I like what they did. I like that they swung for the fences.
DeMarcus Ware is 50 years old.
Right. I have real questions whether DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller are going to stay healthy. Neither guy has been a picture of health through their career. If they stay healthy, it's the best pass rushing duo in the NFL, I think, pretty clearly. But I don't know if that's going to be the case. And I guess that's all in the eye of the beholder.
If if Aqib Talib stays healthy, their coverage is better. And that's a huge if, too. Boy, don't we know that.
All right. Very good. Very good. So, great Denver talk there. Now, next team we're going to talk about, Kansas City Chiefs. Funny situation with the Chiefs last year. So they went 2-14 2 years ago. And everybody who's everybody, analysts, picked them to be that team that went not worst to first because of Denver, of course, but worst to good. So when they started out, was it 8 or 9-0? And it was like not much of a surprise, even though they were 2-14 the previous year. I like the Chiefs. I do not like what they did this offseason. I think they had, you know, I think they were kind of a phantom 11-5 in that the schedule was they played a last place schedule and it was really, really, you know, really soft. And when they played against the better teams, they had issues. And that loss in the playoffs to the Colts would, you know, make me pull my hair out for years and years and years if I were a big Chiefs fan. And I felt like there were some areas of need that they could have addressed in the offseason and didn't, particularly at wide receiver. I mean, their wide receivers were already bad outside of Bowe, and I'm sure we'll argue about Dwayne Bowe. I think Dwayne Bowe is a pretty good number one receiver, but that's a minority opinion. But, you know, they McCluster left, and they kind of replaced him with DeAnthony Thomas. But I felt like they should have gone out and gotten one of these, even if they took a risk on a guy like Nix, I would have understood it, you know? But so I think they were an 11-5. I think they were a 9-7 team masquerading as an 11-5 team, and I expect them to come back down to earth this year. Cowboy Senior, since this is a team, you can probably see a little straight arrow about being not a huge Patriots rival. What do you think about the Chiefs?
I got to agree with what you said about Bowe somewhat. Okay, he's a very good number one receiver. Not a great one, however, he was head and shoulders above anything else they had, and they certainly couldn't afford to lose them. I mean, you look at their receiving corps right now, and there's not much there. Of course, Alex Smith doesn't exactly like to throw the ball downfield anyway. I mean, their leading receiver last year was Jamaal Charles. I mean, he's their leading everything. He's their whole offense. Yeah, the guy's unbelievable, but I mean, how much can he take? How many times can you give a guy the ball and throw him the ball and expect him to be there? And if he ever went down, they would have no offense. Their defensive numbers last year were good, but not when they played against really good offenses. You know, if you look at their defensive totals, the points against and stuff, it's pretty good. It's very respectable. But they did play a weak schedule. Yeah. They're probably a 500 team. They're a team that relies mostly on their running game and this, quote, game manager quarterback. They do nothing to scare you. A good defense will come in and dare him to throw the ball and put eight guys on the line of scrimmage against Charles. And what are they going to do then? And their defense is okay. So I see them as about a 500 team. I'm agreeing with Cowboy Jr. on this one.
Hey, Jeff, how do you feel about Kansas City? Let's talk about Charles.
All right, first of all, Dwayne Bowe sucks.
There.
He is
someone,
terrible.
Someone had to say
He's
it.
He's never going to be good. I'm sorry that you like him. I don't know why you like him. I wouldn't take him on the Patriots for the third guy. He's terrible. Like, he has the size. He has the speed. He can't get open. He can't catch the ball. Like, every time I've ever watched that guy play, it's just unbelievably bad. And I feel like he just backed his way into a contract because of their status of not having any wide receivers, and they just have to keep rolling him out there, and he sucks.
We're not going to rehash it here, Jeff. But you should take a look at who his quarterbacks have been. I made a list for a coworker of mine who had the same opinion as you. And when Alex Smith is like clearly not even close, clearly the best quarterback you've ever played with, it makes a difference. Go ahead, buddy. Sorry to interject there.
All right. Well, interjection on the interjection. I never really give that as an excuse for a number one receiver. I mean, you should, even if your quarterback is the worst quarterback in the league, you should still be able to, you know, get at least 1,300 yards. 8-9 touchdowns, no problem. And yeah, anyway, you just can't do it.
He had 15 touchdowns 3 years ago.
Well,
I love arguing about Dwayne Bowe, Jeff. I could do this all night.
We'll see. He'll be out of the league in 2 years. Anyway, I figure I got 1 or 2 years left on Jamaal Charles. You know, if he can catch, you know, 70, 80 passes again. But yeah, like Big Raj said, if he gets hurt, they got nothing. I'm like the biggest Alex Smith fan in the world. Big 49ers fan. He should have 2 Super Bowls by now. He got totally robbed. by a punt returner and a flash-in-the-pan, overrated suckbag tattoo guy.
But, Colin Kaepernick, folks. Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Sorry, that's a huge contract.
But, yeah, the way it's set up now, I mean, obviously we'll get to our predictions at the end of the segment, but I like them as, like, you know, 8-8, 9-7 at best. Yep. Alex Smith, top five MVP, though. Mark it down.
sounds like we're in agreement there. Speaking about Charles, I mean, he is one of the true difference makers on offense in the NFL. I mean, I know I said they're going to come back down to earth, and I do believe that, but I think we're being maybe a little bit hard on the Chiefs here. With a guy like Charles, he's an Adrian Peterson. He's a guy where even surrounded by nothing, he can make your offense good by himself. He's that good. And defensively, I think they're better than an average defense. I mean, Justin Houston was having like a defensive MVP caliber season last year, and he went down for the season. And when he went down is when they started having some issues. But I just can't get it, even with him, I just can't get it out of my head how you blow. It was a 28-point lead in the playoffs, right? I mean, a 28-point lead. I mean, that's just... it's just crushing, and I think it follows him a little bit into this season, and the schedule is going to be much, much more difficult than it was last year, and teams are going to key on Charles more. The one thing that they can point to that could be a saving grace for them is that Alex Smith threw the ball downfield one game all season, and that was that playoff game, and he had a great game, and Bo had his by far his best game of the last 2 years in that playoff game. And I think they're going to have to be willing to do that because teams are going to come in to play against them where stopping Jamaal Charles is A, B, and C, right? And very similar to what happens with the Vikings in that, you know, you need to be able to do something else to keep that defense honest. So I do like DeAnthony Thomas from Oregon. If you guys know DeAnthony Thomas from Oregon, they took him in the fourth round, and he's replacing McCluster. They say they've been lining him up in the slot, and if he can replace McCluster and things break the right way, and that defense is as good as it was the first six games of the season last year, they could definitely make some noise, and they could definitely make the playoffs. I just think there's too many variables there that hurt them. All right. So, any final thoughts on Kansas City other than Jeff and I seem to have one like real solid disagreement per team. So, hopefully we're going to see where these disagreements end up. It's exciting. You guys good with Kansas City?
Yeah. I mean, I think we all had them. Go ahead, Keith.
Well,
had them right around 500, but everybody for kind of a different reason. You know, Jeff wasn't as high on Bowl as you or me, I consider him at least above average. Jeff considers him to suck. Jeff is much higher on Alex Smith, I think, than anybody else in here. But yet, he had him around 500 also. I mean, we all kind of arrived at the same conclusion by a different path.
Absolutely. Next team, you know, for my money, they're probably the most interesting team in the division, and that's the Chargers. The Chargers... very good for a number of years. The year before last year, terrible. Everyone kind of wrote him off for dead. Phil Rivers now sucks. And they came out and proved some people wrong last year and made a nice push at the end for the playoffs. They have some young talent. I like their offense. I really like their offense a lot. I like Rivers. I think he's a gamer. He's got that fire in his belly and that will to win that we like to see with our quarterbacks. I don't mind the fact that he shows his guys up sometimes because he's so emotional, and I think his teammates don't mind it either. Three-headed running back after bringing in Donald Brown from Indianapolis with Donald Brown, Ryan Matthews, the resurgent Ryan Matthews, who finally had the season that everybody thought he could have, again, right after he got written off by everybody. And Danny Woodhead, who is there, he's their cowboy senior. He's their Swiss Army knife who can do a number of different things. Keenan Allen looks like a burgeoning number one receiver. Malcolm Floyd coming back. Malcolm Floyd, who suffered a real nasty-looking neck injury last year. In OTAs, they say he's been the best player in camp. And if he could come back and be that field stretcher that he was, kind of what he did when Vincent Jackson was there, is a two who can exploit the single coverage because of his size. Two good tight ends, Antonio Gates, and I think Ladarius Green is on everybody's sleeper list. So I like this team a lot, and I think they showed some moxie. And the thing I really like is that they showed they can beat Denver when it matters, even though I know they lost in the playoffs, but they did beat them on that Thursday night football game that was important, and they're a bad matchup for Denver. So let's start things off with Keith here on the Chargers.
Oh, I think you covered most of it. I agree with what you're saying. Philip Rivers is kind of like a Brett Favre. No fear. Throw the ball in between defenders. The running game, I really like the running game. If Matthews can repeat from what he did last year. Danny Woodhead is, my opinion, their most valuable player. Come in on 3rd-and-3, catch the ball out of the backfield, even run it straight up the middle for 7 yards. You can't see him till he pops out of the line. I love Danny Woodhead. Defensively, we'll see. I don't think they have enough to stop the Broncos for sure.
Hey, absolutely. Cowboy Senior, any thoughts on the Chargers?
Yeah, again, I got to agree with a lot. The one thing I really liked, and you already talked about it, but it was a real under the radar move signing Donald Brown. He was a really good player in that ED offense. You know, everybody thought when they traded for Trent Richardson that, oh, man, he was going to be the bell cow and Brown was going to disappear. And by the end of the season, everybody realized that Donald Brown was really a better player than Trent Richardson. And to bring him in to be able to spell Matthews now so you don't have to completely beat him up. And then, let's face it, he had that breakout year last year. He's a real good back, but now you don't have to wear him out at all because you can give significant playing time to Donald Brown, and there isn't much of a drop-off. He does everything well. And then Danny Woodhead, Mr. Clutch. I mean, Patriot guys here, we love him. We miss him. Danny Woodhead's about as good when it comes to a big play. 3rd-and-8, I want Danny Woodhead on the field. He's probably going to be the guy that makes that play. He does it all the time. He's just awesome. And I think Philip Rivers is right below, just a notch below the real, real Cadillac quarterbacks in the league. He's not far behind them at all. I love his fire. I love his leadership ability. The old showing your teammates up thing isn't so bad, you know. Dan Marino, Tom Brady does that once in a while, too. He's just a real fiery leader, and I think his teammates totally respect him for that. So, yeah, I think this is a good team. This is going to be a fun team to watch this year. And I expect big things from the Chargers.
Anything to add there, Jeff?
Well, Big Raj, I'm really happy that you said you liked Danny Woodhead after Little Raj compared you to him. That'd be awkward. Not a big Danny Woodhead fan. Actually, the Chargers, their defense last year was terrible. And they drafted a lot of big guys on defense. They went defense heavy in the draft. So it can only get better, especially the pass defense. They got that guy Verrett, so, and with Flowers, I think they've got some better cornerbacks. But yeah, Philip Rivers, I think that he's, you know, a few years removed now from the Norm, what's his name there, North Turner, swamp, just like hell quarterback sinking coach that he is. So I feel like he's going to jolt up to one of those top three guys this season. He's going to pass for over 5,000 yards. They also drafted a bunch of offensive linemen. He's not going to get sacked, you know, 50 times again. And, yeah, they have Donald Brown for Danny Woodhead concussion insurance, which is good. Ryan Matthews is going to have a great season. Yeah, this is going to be a really good year. This is going to be the year of Philip Rivers. Mark it down.
All right.
Love the Chargers this season.
Yeah. And, I mean, a guy we're not talking about, probably the best player on their defense, is Eric Weddle, who's a excellent safety. Does everything kind of guy. I think their defense is a little better than terrible. And they have Manti Te'o, which is just fun all around, right, for everybody?
Hottest girlfriend in the league.
Corey Leggett is another. He's a good defensive end. So I think we're all in agreement, again, surprisingly in agreement on the Chargers here. So while we're talking about the Chargers, just dive in a little... diving a little deeper, what do you guys think of Keenan Allen? So Keenan Allen put up big numbers last year. He's a rookie, second-round pick last year, put up big numbers. Do you think it's Rivers making Allen and just the lack of other options, like Floyd went down and Vincent Brown isn't very good? Or do you think Keenan Allen's the real deal? I think he's the real deal, and I think he can take another big step up this year, especially with Floyd back.
I agree with you. Rivers can force the ball all he wants. He's still going to make the plays. And he made some spectacular catches last year. I remember some of them catches. He's just going to get better second year in the league.
Yeah, with more support, like Roger said, from Floyd, taking him deep. Yeah, I think he's only going to get better, too. I like Keenan Allen. And, you know, we've had this whole discussion about the Chargers and their offense, and we haven't even mentioned the veteran. You know, Gates had a really good year last year. That guy's not gone yet.
Nope.
He had a very good year. He's still really reliable. He's still one of the better pass-catching tight ends in the league. Yeah. So it's just another piece that they have in that offense. They're going to be a high-powered offense.
If they can run that kind of two-tight-end offense like the Patriots run.
That's right.
Where, you know, if you got one on one side and one on the other, I mean, you can't double-team them both. So.
Yeah,
and that also helps the wideouts.
And Ladarius Green is the real deal. He's a physical specimen. He's another one of those, looks like a basketball player out there, but he can run. He can really run. So if he puts it together with Gates, with still a little bit left in the tank, Keenan Allen, this is a high powered offense. And you know, Jeff, you might not be too far off there. If they put it all together, I think Rivers could have one of those MVP caliber seasons, especially with the secondaries in this division. So getting to go against Kansas City's secondary twice a year is pretty nice. Yeah, so very good, very good.
Well, it's nice to hear you agree with me, Roger. I guess I got to change up my thoughts a bit.
And Donald Brown, again, Ryan Matthews, healthy last year, but not exactly a picture of health throughout his career. I think very, very good move bringing him in. I agree with Cowboy Senior on that one. All right, so those are your three playoff teams from the AFC West. And now the Raiders.
The Raiders.
Raiders, 4-12 last year, 4-12 for what seems like the 10th, 11th year in a row. I'm sure that's not accurate, but certainly close to it. I think they've made some, and this might be the minority opinion on the couch tonight, but I think they've made some strides to relevancy. You hate to say that someone passing away is good, but I think that Al Davis dying helped that franchise tremendously. I mean, he was, if he would have retired, I would say the same thing. I just saying the fact that he's not running, you know, the day-to-day operations helps them. He was a fantastic owner. And it seemed that he really lost it toward the end. And I mean, he did a lot for football too. And I'm fully aware of that. But since he's no longer running things, they seem to have some direction. Drafted Derek Carr as their quarterback of the future, a pick that I liked. I think Derek Carr slid into the second round solely because of his last name and the fact that his brother was such a bust. I think he's got all the tools, and I think you could have made the case for taking him over Teddy Bridgewater. So he looks like a good quarterback of the future. They have Matt Schaub there, who is certainly he's that veteran placeholder for a year or two, or just basically until Carr is ready. Three-headed running back. They brought McFadden back, brought in MJD, Maurice Jones-Drew from the Jaguars. And a kid to keep an eye on who got hurt last year is a real nice combination of power and speeds, Latavius Murray. If he's given the reps, I truly believe that he would be better than both the other guys. But regardless, those are some weapons. And then they brought in some veterans on defense like Justin Tuck, Lamar Woodley. So I certainly don't see them as a playoff team, but I think they're there. They're headed in the right direction, finally. And just excited to get you guys' thoughts on this this dreck of an NFL franchise.
Yeah, I think they could, you know, they could be a little better than last year, which isn't saying a lot. And they, as you said, right direction. But I still think they're a few years away. I do like some of the things they did. Carr was a nice pick. Obviously, Khalil Mack was an excellent pick and should give them a monster on defense for quite a few years. Schaub will give them some stability for now as they usher Carr in. Might be a good guy to tutor him. Yeah, the running back situation is nice. I still see the ceiling on this team. 6 wins. If they go 6-10 and make strides and are more competitive in games, and the young guys like Mack really look good, and Latavius Murray looks good, like the explosive guy that you've talked about, Raj, and they're moving in the right direction, I think that's the best that they can hope for. And do a good job in the draft next year again, and stop putting together a program that's going to get better, not just keep changing everything up every year with all different veterans like Al Davis was doing, where you literally just never go anywhere. So hopefully under new management, it'll get better, and maybe they are finally moving in the right direction. But nothing big is going to happen this year, that's for sure. I don't think there's any doubt that they're the doormat of this division.
Any thoughts, Jeff or Keith?
Matt Schaub is terrible.
So,
well, unless McFadden and Drew run for 3,000 yards combined, I feel like they're going to be 3-13.
Unless McFadden can do it in 4 games, that's not going to happen, because that's about as many games as he can play in a row.
That's true.
So we get some negative talk about the Raiders here. One, you know, it's an interesting thing with the Raiders in that they signed a bunch of veteran free agents. They signed a bunch of veteran free agents, like they're a team. And I disagreed with this at the time, but I've kind of come around on it. I think they did it to kind of tutor the new guys. But if you look at like who they brought in free agency, MJD on the back end of his career, right? Bringing McFadden back, a very good player who can't stay healthy. James Jones. They signed James Jones, who you would think, who's going to sign James Jones? Who would James Jones benefit most? Would be like the number 2 or 3 on a contender. And they signed him, they signed him to a pretty big deal. And I guess it's to school guys with a lot of natural talent who haven't put it together yet, like Andre Holmes and, in particular, Denarius Moore. Rod Streeter has shown some flashes. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I blasted on our sister podcast, Place to Be Nation Extra Point, I blasted the Justin Tuck signing when it happened. I said I thought it was the, it made no sense to me. But again, I'm coming around a little bit. But they signed Antonio Smith, who's another veteran free agent. Lamar Woodley, Terrell Brown. So they've brought in a number of guys that say we want to compete this year. And I mean, I think if things broke the right way, they could be that team. They could be that team going from 4-12 to 9-7, 10-6. I know it's tough to see, but it happens in the NFL every year.
There's always a few teams every year that surprise everybody. So who knows? Yeah. Maybe it's the Raiders' turn.
Absolutely, but again, I think they're heading in the right direction, and we'll see. It just for this franchise, it just seems to all fall apart on Sundays, and you know. For their fan base, they have a great fan base. I hope they're a little bit better. But all right, so now comes everyone's favorite part of the Sports Lounge, as has been a custom in our Major League Baseball division recaps or division previews, however you want to look at it. You're going to get our expert predictions for how this division's going to go. So why don't we let our guest of honor here, Cowboy Senior, start us off.
I don't think it's hard. I think it's pretty easy. Nobody's going to touch Denver in the regular season again, unless you want to predict Peyton going down, which I don't think we're here to predict stuff like that. Who could see that coming? So you got to have Denver first. I definitely have San Diego second, Kansas City third, and the Raiders holding things up, trying to make progress. I think that's a pretty basic 1-2-3-4. I'd be really surprised to see it go any other way.
All right, Jeff.
Well, at the end of the season, I'm either going to look like a huge idiot, according to Mr. Morissette there.
Which one?
Your dad. Or the biggest genius of all time. Because you heard it here first. San Diego's winning the division this year. 13-3. Broncos, I'm not even predicting a Peyton Manning injury. They're going to go 11-5. And then Kansas City, 8-8. Oakland, I'm going to say, I think, that, like you said, Roger, they got a lot of spark They got a lot of new, exciting things going on, so I'll give him an extra win. 4-12 for the Raiders.
All right. Keith.
All right. I got Denver 14-2 winning the division. The Chargers, maybe 11-5. Kansas City, about 9-7. And the Raiders, I'll give them 2 extra wins this year, 6.
Excellent. Cowboy Senior, we'll let you pick the records because this is something we haven't done, but I think it's a good thing to do in football. So we'll let you give your records here now that the other two guys have.
Okay. I'll say Denver goes 13-3 again. San Diego goes 10-6. The Chiefs go 8-8. And the Raiders go 5-11.
All right. And here's the Cowboys' picks. So these are the ones you want to take to the bank. Denver. I like Denver in first place as well. I'm going to say they're going to go 12-4. I like San Diego in second place at 10-6. I'm going to pick Oakland in third place at 9-7. And Kansas City in last place at 6-10.
Hey, can I throw a question at Jeff here?
Sure.
Hey, Jeff. If Decker was still a Bronco, would they be winning the division?
Yes. They're too old.
No hesitation. All right, I like
it. Too old. Manning's neck's not going to hold up. Eric Decker, he's the difference maker.
Okay. I like the guy. That big a difference, but I do like him.
Awesome, guys. That was a fantastic preview. I feel like I'm ready to watch some AFC West football, and I can't wait to do the other 7 with you guys. We're going to take a quick break here at the lounge. I'm sure Keith has to use the restroom. I have to run outside for some fresh air. Cowboy Senior is just taking everything in, being his first time in the lounge. And Jeff is kind of his sponsor, shall we say, showing him around the lounge, showing him how we do things here. But during the break, you'll hear a number of our other podcasts here at the Place to Be Nation family that I would strongly suggest you tune into, whether you're a wrestling fan, pop culture fan, big sports fan, or just want to hear some good stuff. Please tune in, and we'll be back with talk of the National League West. So, Cowboy out.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
I'm not loving you way I wanted to. What I had to do, had to run from you. I'm in love with you, but the vibe is wrong, and that haunted me all the way home.
So welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Hope you enjoyed the break. And we're going to now go over our last division in Major League Baseball. We've covered the other five. We've given you our predictions, some bold. Jeff Machado, some not so bold. Andy, true to form, Flanagan. This is it. So after, just to give you guys a heads up, after this week we're going to pick a hot baseball topic and do a deep dive on that. But doing these divisions have been fantastic. I've really enjoyed it, and I know everybody else has too. So we're closing things up with one of the more interesting divisions in the league. Very much a two-horse race, the NL West. So standings where they sit right now, we have the Dodgers ahead of the Giants by a half a game. And I believe the Giants are in a three-way tie for the first wild card spot as of now. We're taping on Sunday at about 7:20 p.m. And then, like I said earlier in the opening, kind of a flaming pile of trash after that with the Padres 11 back, the Diamondbacks 13 back, and the Rockies 14 back. So just going to start things off here with the Dodgers, and I'm just going to kick it right over to Keith, who is our baseball expert here, as you all know, and I know he's got some pretty strong feelings about this team. So what do you think about your L.A. Dodgers there, Keith?
I think this is the best team in the National League, top to bottom. Offense, pitching, I think this is the team to beat. They have the best pitcher on the planet, not named Felix Hernandez and Clayton Kershaw. I can't back off of that. I already said Felix was better. And they also have another, you can call him 1A, 1B with Zach Greinke this year. Hyunjin Ryu, he's a great number three pitcher. Josh Beckett looks like the old Josh Beckett. Coincidence, contract year, I don't know. But and then you got Dan Haren as your number five pitcher. That's pretty damn good to me. And then offensively, D. Gordon, Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp, Adrian Gonzalez, Hanley Ramirez. It just goes on and on. They're very deep. And I think they're going to win this division, in my opinion. It's going to be a tight race, though, because the Giants are pretty good, too.
Great. Thanks, Keith. And Cowboy Senior, you have any thoughts on the Dodgers and where they sit now and where they might be going?
Yeah, I like a lot of Keith's thoughts on the Dodgers. They're true to what they are. They're the Hollywood team of baseball when you look at star power. They have more star power than anybody else. Two huge stars at the top of the rotation, especially Kershaw, but not bad for a 1A in Zach Greinke. And then they're just loaded with studs in the lineup. They got the guy that everybody wants to see, MV Puig. They got D. Gordon batting before him now, who's just an electrifying player. They got RBI machine Adrian Gonzalez, all-around star Matt Kemp. Hanley Ramirez, who, if he's right, is just is another star quality guy. They're Hollywood. They're stars. They're really good. They're a mix of veterans and youth and exuberance. They're going to be a really, really hard team to beat. They're really good. But you look at all that, and guess what? They're still only a half a game ahead of the Giants. So, to me, they should be more ahead of them, but they're only a half a game ahead of them. But still, this is a team that's built on stars that, if anything short of getting to the World Series, would be a disappointment. That's how good they are. They're just loaded with studs. And if they do get to the World Series, they're a National League team that having a DH certainly isn't going to hurt them, because they got those four outfielders where they always have to sit one. Now, okay, well, Crawford or Ethier or whatever can be your DH. They're fine playing by American League rules. So this team is just loaded. And, yeah, there's not too much you can say about them that's bad. I don't see a weakness. If you can find one, you give it to me.
Yeah, so kind of, and I'm sure Jeff would echo this, sort of our Denver Broncos here of the major leagues, in that a lot of star power, but will they be able to put it to keep it together? The guy you didn't even talk about is Kenley Jansen, who may be the most physically gifted closer in all of baseball, and he's young. That's one thing the team kind of lacks is a lot of veterans. I mean, they got D. Gordon and Puig's not an old guy, but not too much youth. And you know, the only other thing, they don't have too many guys who have really, you know, they have a lot of guys on the team who have put up big numbers on bad teams. Okay, Hanley Ramirez, Adrian Gonzalez, right? So big numbers, crappy teams. And so when it's playoff time, do they have that? Do they have the, we know they have the tangibles, but in a tight race in the playoffs, do they have the intangibles to get it done? And you know, there's a good chance that they do, but I think that if you're looking for a hole, that could be a theoretical hole. I know Jeff pretty well, and I think he might have a strong feeling or two about the Dodgers. So I'm gonna kick it over to Mr. Machado.
Well, you know, I'm the show's weakness, where there usually isn't one finder. And I don't know, how do you guys feel about Mr. Mattingly over there?
Well, I agree. He is a weakness. I don't like Don Mattingly at all as a manager. I really don't.
Yeah, well,
I can't agree with a lot of the things he does.
I don't like anybody that wore pinstripes for their whole career. But, you know, I don't think he's really holding them back that much. And, you know, if you want to say if they win the whole thing, it's despite Don Mattingly, that's fine. But this is a stacked team. You know, I don't think you need the manager of the year to plug the names into this lineup and just roll them out there. Roll the balls out and let them play. That's basically all he has to do with this team. I could manage them.
I could too.
Yeah.
Firmly plant Carl Crawford's ass on the bench. That's what I would do. Matt Kemp never comes out.
And I think that's a good call, though, Jeff, in that Mattingly is unproven, and I don't think he's a great manager by any stretch. Like these guys say, the team may manage itself a little bit. When you have this much talent, it's tough to screw up. But if that's the case, why are they only a half a game above? Why are they only a half a game ahead of San Francisco at this point?
I can answer that.
A lot of games.
I can. Clayton Kershaw was out the first month of the season, and if you check the standings from April, they dug themselves a pretty big hole back in April, and you know they're climbing out of it. And again, like you said, the Giants are also pretty good. So,
yeah, and Kershaw. You know, I think we would be doing a disservice if we stopped talking about the Dodgers without maybe talking a little more about him. So, household name, great pitcher. I think, I don't know if everyone knows how great, but I mean, what he's done this year has been, you know, Sandy Koufax-esque.
Yes.
Just off the charts. Just, I mean, Pedro Martinez and his absolute prime kind of stuff, which In this day and age, you just don't, you know, just like with Pedro. I mean, Pedro did it in the steroid era, which is, I guess, a little more impressive. But you just don't see guys doing what Kershaw's done this year. If he continues to pitch like this and stays as hot as he is, they're going to be, I mean, as good as the other guys are, if they can throw him out there three times in a seven-game series, they're going to be so, so, so tough to beat. And you know, I know Keith, and he is our baseball expert, says Felix Hernandez was the best pitcher in baseball. I got to go with this guy. I mean, the way he's pitching, and I'm sure Keith would say it's a 1-1A kind of situation.
Yes, it is. One's righty and one's lefty. There you go.
Right.
Now we both win.
can I kind of give you his numbers? I mean, they are eye-popping. Felix's numbers are good, but, okay, you could say he pitches in the National League, and that's part of it, but 12-2. 0.80 whip, which is something that's unheard of.
That's ridiculous.
1.76 ERA, 112 innings, 141 strikeouts, 15 walks. And that's not even human. I don't care. I don't care if that's in AAA. That's not even human to be pitching that well. He is just having an incredible season. He is the standard right now. There's no question about it.
He is. But I got to take you back to last postseason. He pitched twice against the Cardinals, and they handed it to him twice. Adam Wainwright outdueled him.
And Adam Wainwright's no slouch.
No, he's not. But I'm saying, you know, the big pressure came with the postseason, and he folded. Yeah. Now, maybe that experience he has, now we might know how to handle it, you know, what to expect. Maybe his adrenaline is a little lower, he's more calm. We'll see. But
it's clutch gene, right?
He's young, too.
Yeah. Oh, he's definitely
see what
young.
Happens this right. year. Yeah. He could turn that completely around.
Correct.
I mean,
absolutely.
None of us would be surprised.
Nope.
I think that goes back to what I said about are they going to be the same guys when the pressure's on?
Right.
And, I mean, I think that's a real valid question with a guy like Puig, too, who's I respect what he had to go through to come to America to fulfill his dream is you know, a lot of people wouldn't be able to do it. But at the end of the day, the guy's a bit of a head case, right? A bit of a head case, maybe a little – you might be able to throw him off his game a little bit. Or, Keith, do you think he's more of a Manny Ramirez and he's see the ball, hit the ball, he doesn't really care what the score is or doesn't really feel the pressure because he barely knows what's going on?
I think he plays like a 13-year-old child. That's what I think. He's just so excited. He's making mistakes that kids make in Double-A. He's doing it at the major league level, though, because he's that talented. They're willing to let him try to go first to third on a ball that's hit directly at a center fielder. You know, tagging up from first to second when the right fielder is already camped under the ball. Stupid things like that. Overthrowing the cutoff man.
Absolutely.
You know, does he have some flair, bat flipping and stuff like that? Sure, but you know what? I love it.
Absolutely. So if I'm managing, and Jeff, I don't know if you agree with this. You probably do. If I'm managing against them in the postseason, I'm drilling Puig right in the ass his first time up.
That's fine. And then he steals second.
And see how Yasiel's gonna react. Do you think he does something stupid and gets himself suspended for the rest of the series, Jeff?
Probably. He's got that Milton Bradley thing. That would be a good strategy. I never thought of it that way, but I guess you got a little bit more of that bloodlust in you than I do.
Yeah, you know, I bet Donnie Baseball wouldn't have thought of that one either, you know.
No.
you've got enough of a veteran presence on that team that somebody should be able to reel him in, especially in a playoff
I think
game.
They already have.
Yeah.
You know, because if you remember when he came on the scene last year, he was out of control.
Right, I mean, that's true.
And he's, you know, I mean, like I said, he's still making stupid mistakes. He still flips his bat, but nothing like he did when he first came up. And, you know, he's been hit with pitches already. They've already tried that with him. Was it in Arizona? Wasn't that big battle they had?
Right. Yep, yeah. Absolutely.
And
that was Matty Williams and Matt McGuire got in each other's faces, right, if I remember correctly.
I don't even remember Puig charging the mound. He didn't stop that.
He didn't, no.
The fight came when Zach Greinke retaliated.
Right.
That's when the fight happened. So.
But, and again, looking at the team, and not to play devil's advocate here, now I don't have anything against the Dodgers, but I think their lineup is more names than production at this point. I think they have some guys who are underperforming. I mean, Adrian Gonzalez, he's hitting .260 with 15 home runs. I mean, that's good. It's not the best cleanup hitter in baseball good or anything like that. Hanley hitting .278. I always worry that he's going to go down too at the wrong time. No, he's very much the Aqib Talib of that team, Cowboy Senior. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, but he's also a real streaky guy. I mean, if Hanley gets it going at the right time, there's nobody better. When he's got it going on, when he's on one of his hot streaks, which he really hasn't had one this year.
I was just going to say he hasn't had one yet.
That
so.
Could happen at any time.
Right. And
Gonzi, okay, you look at those numbers, but you also got to look at 68 RBIs.
There you go.
That's nothing to sneeze at.
No, I mean,
that's underperforming because of the guys he has setting the table for him. So, I mean, you might have just hit the nail on the head as to why they're only a half a game ahead. What's going to happen if these guys stop performing just to their normal level? It's a loaded team. It really is.
And I think the poster boy for the underperformance, and Keith's going to hate me for saying this, is Matt Kemp, who the guy at his best is MVP candidate every year, and he hasn't justified keeping Andre Ethier or Carl Crawford on the bench this season.
I don't know.
Or, I mean, at least the fact that we're even talking about it it means that the guy's at about 50% of what he was. And what reasons do you have for that, Keith? I know you follow him a lot closer than some other guys.
The shoulder injury he had. When he destroyed his shoulder when he crashed into the wall. I believe that was that 2012? And I don't think his power has returned yet. He used to be a guy, he'd hit the ball right center field. A lot of his home runs came to right center. And he doesn't have that power stroke right now.
Do you think it's coming back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's getting better and better. So I mean, the power hasn't returned yet, but everything else is... I mean, this guy was batting like 210 in May. You know, he's batting like 270 now, so... You know, he's got 22 doubles, only 8 home runs, you know, only 5 stolen bases. That was another big part of his game was stealing bases, but I don't think that'll return either because he busted his ankle pretty good, too, last year.
You know, you talk underperforming. A guy that flies under the radar on this team that is really doing a nice job is Juan Uribe.
Yes.
I watch the ESPN highlights every night, and it seems like every other night they're showing a great defensive play at third base by Uribe, and I never thought of him as a great glove man. And the guy's batting 300.
Yep.
Very quietly in that lineup, he's been a real solid guy.
Absolutely. And I think the reason you don't think of him as a great defensive player is he's got this Pillsbury Doughboy build. You know, you don't look at Juan Uribe and think, now there's a natural athlete. But he's improved. And now he good veteran presence. He's got some pop, and he provides some stability for them over there at the hot corner.
Yeah, he's a solid player.
So I think our consensus on the Dodgers is they're in first place. If the lineup puts it together, watch out. You're talking about the best team in the major leagues. If they continue at their current clip, it's going to come down to the pitching in the playoffs. Can Kershaw do what he's doing now in the postseason? Same for Greinke, who's always been a little bit of a head case as well. And, you know, a lot of natural talent in that rotation. But can they do it when the chips are down and the bright lights are on? And I guess we'll see. Anything to add, Jeff, on the Dodgers?
Yeah, well, you guys were just talking about all that stuff. I was looking up the 0.8 whip for Kershaw this season really stands out. And he's currently, it's like the fifth best season of all time. And seasons 2 through 4 are all like before 1915. And number one, by the way, because you guys just happened to compare him to Pedro Martinez, Sandy Koufax. Pedro Martinez in 2000, 0.73.
Yeah, we had a front row seat for that, and that was the greatest pitching season I've ever witnessed.
Yeah, so he's right up there this season.
It's pretty elite company to be in.
It sure is.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking Doc Gooden in his first 2 years, just best of the best of the best stuff. And I didn't see Sandy Koufax. I'm a little young for that, but I believe that until he blew out his arm, this was the type of stuff he was doing. So great point, Jeff. And so now that we've gushed about this Dodgers this Dodgers team, who are these bunch of nobodies who are only a half game back from them? Huh? San Francisco Giants. 57-47, a half game back, a franchise that they just seem to kind of get it done. They get it done, and looks like Cowboy Senior's chomping at the bit to get his thoughts in on the Giants here. So we'll let him go.
I do have some thoughts on the Giants, and you're right; they're the antithesis of the Dodgers. They're the no star power team. If you look at their lineup, the only guy that's a big time star is Buster Posey, and I mean, he's not that huge of a star. As a catcher, he's a very good hitter. But the other guys in the lineup, nobody wows you. Michael Morse, Kung Fu Panda when he plays. Hunter Pence is a nice player. There's nothing special at all in that lineup. Then you look at their pitching rotation. Okay, Bumgarner's good, but he's not a super stud. And I would say you would consider him their ace. Tim Hudson is having just an outstanding season. But again, that's not real star power. Lincecum seems to be reborn somewhat, although he's been a little shaky his last couple of starts. Ryan Vogelsong's an okay guy. That's what they all are. They're all okay guys. Now they've acquired Jake Peavy, who's pitching tonight against the Dodgers. And, okay, he could be a good number five again, because if you go inside of Jake's numbers, his numbers against National League are always really good. So he could help them out. But, I mean, this team, you look at it on paper and you say, they don't have the star power to compare to these Dodgers, but somehow they get it done. And I want to give you my thoughts on how I think they do it. You go 1 through 5 in that rotation, and nobody completely wows you. but they're all guys that are going to keep you in a game. You look at their lineup, and they don't completely wow you, but they're steady, and they score a few runs a game. So, therefore, they're in a lot of close games, and that brings me to their MVP, who is the antithesis of what you guys talked about, the Dodgers' least valuable guy. I think Bruce Bochy is the best manager in baseball, especially considering he manages in the National League, where you've got the double switches and all the different things with having to replace your pitcher and the small ball and everything else, and that guy never pushes a wrong button. He always pushes the right buttons. It's a tribute to him that this team's a half a game out. And if you, I honestly think he's their MVP, and he is clearly the best manager in baseball. He's head and shoulders, especially in that National League game. He does just an amazing job. He's done it before. He did it when he was in San Diego, too. The guy just gets a lot out of what he has because he puts his team in a position to win, and he just doesn't make mistakes. So that's my view of the Giants, the opposite of the Dodgers, and it's unbelievable what they do with what they have. I'm not saying they're bad. They're a bunch of kind of solid guys, but they certainly don't wow you. But Bruce Bochy just guides them and does an incredible job.
I agree with mostly everything you said. They don't wow you, but they're all consistent. Consistent production. And at times, you know, you might have Michael Moss slumping. Pablo gets hot. Pablo goes into a slump. But if you remember, Brandon Belt was one of the hottest hitters in the league at the beginning of the year, right? Yep. Got hit like 10 home runs in a month.
Still has 10.
You know, they just seem to get those timely hits and the timely pitching. And then that's why they're doing what they're doing. And they're also, it's a veteran group. They know how to win. You know, no, they're very unselfish. You know, they'll hit the ball to the right side to advance the runner. They'll drop down the bunt. And then that's how they're doing it. And one thing I do disagree, Madison Bumgarner, I think, is an ace. Okay. I think he's a true ace.
He is good. He's really good.
12-2.
But, I mean, when you're looking at Kershaw and Greinke.
True.
I mean, we like Bumgarner. He's a really good pitcher, but he's not Kershaw. He's not Greinke.
No, well, yeah. I mean, if you're going to compare him to them, yeah.
You know, when you start talking about the real star pitchers in baseball, I don't know. He flies under the radar a little, maybe. I'm not saying he's not really talented.
12-7 with a 3-1-9.
He's not a name that rolls off of people's tongues like a lot of the others that we talked about.
And, I mean, even, you know, you'd think a team that they're staying in games, they're winning close games, you'd think they'd have a, you know, lights out kind of closer. That's not the case. Romo is, you know, he's underperformed a little bit. I think he's better than what he's shown this year. They do have
actually been replaced
by Casilla. Yes, I'm sorry. See, that's why I'm not the baseball expert.
No, you're right. It's not a lights out closer situation.
No, and
but again, they're all solid. They all do their jobs. Guy like Jeremy Affeldt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lefty comes in and lefties can't touch him. They can't touch him.
And then having Matt Cain. Matt Cain hasn't been himself for 2 years now.
As soon as he signed his contract.
He's done.
Yeah, he's hurt, obviously, now. And, you know, when he comes back, if he can, I mean, he's pitched better this year than he did last year. If he could regain some of that old form. But, you know, looking at the two teams, it's really, I mean, I know Bochy's a great manager, and it's tough to see how they're going to hang with the Dodgers. I mean, it's just tough. I mean, how many guys in their batting order would start for the Dodgers? Three?
Two.
Two. I mean, it's
Sandoval and Buster Posey.
To your point, Bochy is a great manager, and we'll see what happens. You back there, Jeff?
Yeah, what up?
Oh, it hung up on you for a second. I apologize for that. We definitely didn't want to lose. You have any thoughts on the Giants?
Yeah, Tim Hudson. What's happening there? How's he doing that?
So some guys who have all the natural talent in the world. We've talked about this before on here. Some guys have all the natural talent in the world. Let's say Justin Verlander, for example, throws the heater. You can't hit him. He loses the heater. Now he's throwing bat in practice. Other guys learn how to pitch. Tim Hudson learned how to pitch.
Tim Hudson's been a great pitcher his whole career.
Yeah,
I think.
He's really having an outstanding year.
Right, it's resurgent. I mean, you know, he's getting up there in age, so you wouldn't expect this, but
his best year he's had in a while.
2.65 ERA. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's outstanding.
Yeah. And I mean, for him, he needs to keep that up for them to have a shot too. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, but that's a great question, Jeff. And yeah, absolutely.
He learned how to pitch.
Yes. I mean, this isn't that much of an outlier for what he's been for the last 5 years. It's a bit of one, but he's been a great pitcher for a long time, like Keith said.
His career ERA is 3.41.
So I think Jeff's making an insinuation, if I had to guess.
Oh, of course I wouldn't do that.
That how does a guy have his best season at
You know what, though? The juice won't help you spot a fastball.
Exactly. I mean, I think Hudson still throws 88 miles an hour, right?
So, out there.
All right, moving on. We're gonna throw this one to Keith to talk about the Padres, 11 games back.
Do I have to?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's start this off by saying this is a terrible team. They do have some decent pitching coming up, young pitching, but their offense is putrid. I'm surprised they're not 25 games back. I really don't know how they're not that bad. Like I said, with the pitching, you got Andrew Kashner, who's a pretty good pitcher. I believe they got him from the Cubs. You got Jesse Hahn, who's been a pretty good rookie this year for them. What else have we got here? They just traded their closer, Houston Street, to the Angels. And from what I hear, they got some pretty good prospects for him. You know anything about him, Cowboy?
No, I don't.
Yeah, they just traded Houston Street, correct?
The prospects they got back for him. Do you remember their names?
Should be, because Street's a good closer.
I want to say they were Anaheim's best prospects, but
yeah, Anaheim definitely gave up quite a bit to get Street. And San Diego's not going anywhere this year, so that's a great deal for them. Pretty obvious deal for them to make, and for them to get anything back is helpful.
I think it was this guy. Yeah,
the guy they have in their rotation that's doing a nice job this year, especially, is Tyson Ross.
Yes.
Yeah, he started out, he had a good year last year and has really piggybacked on it.
Yeah, he's a real nice young pitcher. And Ian Kennedy's having a kind of a rebirth year this year for them. And I got a feeling 3 days from now he's not going to be on their team anymore.
Nope.
That is a massive mistake for whoever trades for them, because he's totally a product of the ballpark. Yeah. 100%.
I agree.
And if you look at their team offensive rankings, I'm looking at them right now. Runs scored, 30th overall. Batting average, 30th overall. OBP, 30th overall. Slugging percentage, 30th overall. Some of it can be attributed to playing all your home games at Petco. Some of it is, this is an awful lineup. So the fact that their record is even what it is, it really is a tribute to their pitching staff. I mean, these guys have been pretty solid. Their offense is absolutely atrocious.
Yep.
There's no other way to describe it.
Yeah. It's a minor league team, offensively. That's exactly what it is. It's a minor league team.
And to your point, I mean, their best pitcher is Kashner, and he's been down for a while. He looks like he's got ace stuff. So, I mean, their staff's built very, very well for the future, I think, with Kashner and Ross at the top there. I think given the pitcher's park that they're in, that extreme pitcher's park that they're in, you can keep doing this. You can... Ian Kennedy has a 3.66 ERA. Dump him at the trade deadline and bring in the next reclamation project, right? Some guy from the American League East who's been getting lit up. now they have a 3.6 ERA. Get rid of him. But yeah, their lineup is so far away from being decent that it's tough to see them contending in the near future, especially in this division. Like, I think actually the two teams behind them have a better chance to contend in the short term than they do.
They do have the most important ingredient with the pitching. So, you know, you could always sign a few bats next season.
Right, of course.
But
They tried. Not a lot of guys want to go hit in San Diego either because they know it's going to kill their numbers.
Like, that's why you end up with a guy like Carlos Quinton there.
Yeah, and I mean, even Quinton's a guy who, you know, he had 30 home run power and he can't hit 15 there. You know, it's
he can't stay on the field either.
You know, a guy we were talking about before, it makes you wonder. You know, nobody ever put up numbers like Adrian Gonzalez did at Petco. You wonder why he hasn't done more since he's left, especially power numbers. You just wonder why that guy's not a 35-40 home run a year guy hitting in a decent park with what he did when he was a Padre.
I can take a guess at
it. Jeff, any thoughts on why a guy's power numbers would just drop off the face of the earth? Any ideas there?
Well, hey, I could do 40 minutes on Adrian Gonzalez, but if it were some sort of performance-enhancing drug situation, that would only be about 5 minutes of the discussion. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, good. All right, next up.
He's still raking, though. He's still raking out there in L.A. God bless him.
Hey, that he was part of the best Red Sox trade of the last 100 years. So,
but for the record, they had to get rid of Adrian Gonzalez in order for them to get rid of Carl Crawford and Josh Brown.
Oh, I'm 100% agreeing with it. I meant that trade. That trade was the best trade they've ever made. Man, brought them the World Series.
If they could have kept Gonzi, I think they would have.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
He was the chip.
Right. Gonzi. Next up, we have the Arizona Diamondbacks. Team that showed a lot of promise last year, and they've really fallen off the face, you know, fallen flat this year. Spend a lot of time in Arizona. I lived there for about 8 years. Very familiar with these guys, and I know everything that went right for them last year went wrong, is going wrong this year. But I think any discussion about them starts with their best player, and you know they may be even one of top five hitters in baseball, top five overall hitters in baseball, and Paul Goldschmidt, power, a little bit of speed, average. Plays good defense. He's really he's your prototypical solid all-star, great player. And you know, anytime you're starting with a guy like that, the future's bright. He's young. So, Keith, how do you feel about the D-backs?
Here's what I want to do. I want to join the Diamondbacks and the Padres. Take the Diamondbacks lineup is not that bad, and take the Padres pitching, you might have one hell of a team.
Absolutely. And the Diamondbacks made the playoffs last year, correct?
Okay, and off the top of your head, can you name their ace?
It's ugly this year. Right. Wade Miley.
Yeah, there you go. And now I want you to look at his numbers. I mean, in their defense, they did lose their best pitcher, Patrick Corbin. He went down right, I think, in spring training. I don't even think he made a single stop. And they signed Bronson Arroyo. He didn't work out too well for them. They're very weak in the pitching department.
Yes, the lowest ERA among the guys in their starting rotation is Josh Colemanter with a 4.03 ERA. That's the lowest. That's a pretty sad statement about your pitching staff.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, they packed it in. I think it was the right move for them, trading Brandon McCarthy for some prospects, even though he's probably their second best pitcher. I don't like Josh Colemanter as a pitcher. I don't think he should really be in a starting rotation. He's more of a batting practice kind of guy. I think I don't know how he keeps his ERA below 5. I still haven't figured it out. And one of these days, though the walls are coming down, I'm telling you. But McCarthy actually had his peripherals had improved tremendously this year. Like 93 strikeouts, 20 walks. He had added 2 miles an hour to his fastball. And so I think that's actually a good pickup for the Yankees. I think
he's pitched well there.
Yeah, his ERA and WHIP are going to come down based on those peripherals if they're real. And the jump in velocity is something that is usually a very telltale sign that things are looking up. But yeah, this rotation, for lack of a better word, just completely sucks.
Putrid.
With that said, Patrick Corbin was really, really good last year.
Yes. I mean, yeah.
Getting him back, Miley. He's a four on a decent team. Awesome. You know, he strikes some guys out. Coleman, it's just they got to do something. They have to do something about the rotation.
They do have a kid in the mind as Archie Bradley.
Absolutely,
yes. Supposed to be the next coming, so we'll see.
Yeah, and this is a team that they're not a big, you know, not a huge spending team, and right. This is how they've always had to do it. So they're no stranger to having one or two good pitchers, and you know, filling out the rest of the rotation with fodder. And the lineup is good. The lineup is good.
It's a very formidable lineup, especially now that Trumbo's back.
Yeah.
That was a big blow to them as well. I mean, their cleanup hitter got, you know, stress fracture in his foot. And he was off to a torrid start when he started.
Let's talk about Trumbo. I think that's a great segue since we were just discussing how poor their pitching staff is. What the hell were they thinking trading? And Tyler Skaggs, you know, I mean, he hasn't been great this year, but he's 22 years old. It looks like he could be a stud. Why in God's name would you trade him for Mark Trumbo if you're the Diamondbacks? Does it make any sense at all to anyone here?
They're a team that's so pitching poor. And who was Trumbo in California? He was a guy who would get off to this big start every year, hit a bunch of home runs early in the season, and then just kind of peter out as the season went along. And he always struck out a lot. And he's okay. Guys like him aren't that hard to come by.
Well,
especially when you're a team that's pitching poor. I don't know. I that definitely was a bad trade.
Oh, I agree it was a bad trade.
They have no business trading a pitcher to get that guy.
If you look back, starting from 2010, 36, 29, 32, 34, those were his home run totals.
He hits home runs, right?
He's definitely a home run hitter.
I'd say most of them were. I wouldn't say most, but I'm sure if you look, his first halves were always a lot better than his second halves.
Yeah, yeah. The overall numbers, I mean, you know, 122 RBI, 87, 95, 100.
Okay, it's better than I would have thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's actually a really good hitter, but.
But they can't afford
pitching to wins. Pitching wins. I mean, even with Patrick Corbin healthy. You still gave up Tyler Skaggs. What are you doing?
Right. That's my point. I don't like Trumbo. I think he's Adam Dunn without the walks at this point in his career. You look at his numbers, and I mean, you can see kind of a falling batting average, more strikeouts every year. I mean, he struck out 184 times last year. I mean, I'm pretty sure I could go out there and not do that. And then, I mean, he does provide power, but you don't trade stud pitching prospects. I mean, Skaggs was kind of on the level of, like, Dylan Bundy. Kind of thought of similarly to Dylan Bundy in Baltimore. And, I mean, if they made a trade like that, they would get crucified for it. It's kind of the same type of situation. And, you know, it's a dumb front office move. But with that said, good lineup. Aaron Hill, pretty good little second baseman. A lot of people on the East Coast haven't seen Gerardo Parra play that much, but he is he's a good solid outfielder. He's going to be good for them for years to come. And I mean, he has got a missile launcher on his right arm. It's fun watching him throw. I think they did the right thing letting Upton walk. He's not the kind of guy. He's not productive enough for them to pay him. Goldschmidt's a different story. Upton's unfulfilled potential.
Did he walk or did they trade him?
They traded him, correct? Okay. But I mean, right. So he was going to walk.
No, right.
They did the right thing.
I was going to say, though, if they let him walk, then that was stupid. They should have traded
him. Jeff, any thoughts on the Diamondbacks?
No.
All right. Beautiful. All right. And last but not least, we have the, what could have been team, or I don't know how the team is 43-60 and 14 games back, the Colorado Rockies. The way they started the season hitting the ball, they looked like the 1927 Yankees. With Tulowitzki and Cargo, and I really like Nolan Arenado. They just have a number of good players in the heart of that lineup, but man, they've been bad. Any thoughts there, Keith?
Same thing with the Diamondbacks, pitching. Pitching, because this team can hit. They got to be, you know, up to tops in the league in most offensive categories. But pitching-wise, Jorge De La Rosa, again, he's their ace. 11-6 with a 4-1-9. That's not going to get it done. You know, this team, when fully healthy, they're winning games like 10-7.
Right.
You know, you can't win like that in the major leagues. You can't. Not when you're in a division with the Giants and the Dodgers, who have great pitching staffs.
How much of the pitching do you attribute to Coors Field, or do you think that's more of a crutch argument for them?
I mean, I'm sure Coors Field is. That's a big reason why nobody wants to go there.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just like hitters not wanting to go to Petco. It's right. The same argument, yep.
And probably worse for pitchers.
Yeah,
probably worse.
Yeah, it's death pitching there. So they're always going to be that kind of team. They've had some success though. They've gotten to the World Series. I mean, with loaded lineups, that's how they do it. That's how they're going to have to do it. They're going to out slug you. Their park tells them that, you know, we're not going to build our team on pitching. We're going to build our team on offense. And if they're healthy, they're a real good offense.
Real good.
The fact of the matter is, their two best players historically have had trouble staying on the field. Two dynamic players, Tulo and Cargo, always have trouble staying on the field. Just another issue.
Absolutely. And, you know, one guy that maybe gives him a little hope for the pitching staff before he went down was Jordan Lyles, a pretty hot prospect for the Astros, who was an absolute gas can every time they brought him up. And him moving to Coors Field looked like surefire disaster, but he actually started off the season very well. And, he got hurt, which probably has something to do with their record. But, I mean, their lineup, I mean, they've even uncovered a couple of gems that we didn't know about. Yeah. You know, Charlie Blackman,
Corey Dickerson.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's
loaded.
Yeah, and I mean, even more and again, maybe it's the ballpark a little bit, but he's resurrected his career there. And you got to think, if they could get a starter or two with an ERA under four, that...
What they need is ground ball pitches.
Right.
That's what they need. Guys that throw heavy sinkers. But good luck trying to sign somebody. You know, when they can go to, you know, wherever.
Anywhere that's not Coors Field.
You know, they can go play with the Mets, you know, in that Yellowstone Park. Yeah. Right. You know, and make more money, basically. Because when you go to Colorado, you go there to die, basically. Your career is done when you leave there, pitching-wise. Because your ERA is going to be 4.5.
Absolutely. All right, so again, a NL West two-horse race. We're going to switch up the predictions here because I frankly don't care how the other three teams finish. It's inconsequential to me. So, everybody, I want to hear who the division winner is by how many games. We'll go from there. So, I'll go first this time. Cowboys call. Giants by 3.
Interesting.
Okay, Cowboy Senior, Dodgers by 4.
I got the Dodgers by 2.5. Well, no, they can't finish that. Two by 2. But I'll say this: they'll both make the playoffs.
Right.
One of those teams will be the other.
I also agree with that.
How many games are left?
60. Some odd.
60.
Just about
60. Yeah. Dodgers by 8.
Whoa. Oof. You think the Giants are going to fall off?
Oh, you think I think we talked him into it with these guys haven't hit, and what if they do? That was unexpected, Jeff. You always throw me curveballs. I thought you were going to be with me with the Giants. I talked myself into the Giants with the whole the Dodgers haven't been there before, and you know the A-Rod thing. You know, they're all real good when it doesn't matter. But great segment, guys. It's been a real pleasure covering all these divisions in baseball. And now that the pennant races are heating up as we get toward the end of the season, no, next week we'll be able to talk trades too.
Any trade predictions today?
I got nothing for you. We've made a bunch of those already. Keith, do you have a trade prediction or two before we head to break?
Let's see. Tampa Bay is killing my David Price to St. Louis because they keep winning now, sons of bitches. But I say Matt Kemp gets moved out of L.A. Where, I don't know. Possibly Seattle, maybe Boston. John Lester, I hope not, but he may be on the move too.
All right, so Lester...
Wherever he goes, he will help tremendously.
It doesn't help that he said he'd probably come back. Did you see that?
I did.
that might make the offer not quite as sweet. So Lester, Matt Kemp are going to be gone, according to our baseball expert Keith Schmidt.
And I still think David Price gets moved.
All right.
Unless Tampa Bay wins their next
How many games are left? Three games before the
deadline?
I
believe so, yes.
If they win the next three games, maybe not. But if they lose two out of three, he's gone.
He still has a year left on his contract.
Exactly. You can get a king's ransom for him now. You wait till next year, now you're only getting,
Weaker.
And Tampa Bay, that's the type of team that needs to make those big, big deals, trade players when their value is very high, because they can't afford these guys. So, you know, if you can get an Oscar Tavares, Michael Walker, you know, or Tavares and Shelby Miller and Carlos Martinez for David Price.
You must have to do it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to give a little trade prediction on the pitchers thing. Okay, I'll name them off, okay? John Lester, David Price, Cole Hamels, Cliff Lee, none of them go. There's going to be more under-the-radar kind of stuff going, like a A.J. Burnett going to a team like the Orioles. Jonathan Neese maybe going somewhere. Guys like that. I see much more guys, teams picking up guys to shore up that bullpen, which is so important if you're a team on the run. I think none of the big names get traded.
None of them, huh?
None of the four that I just named,
okay,
all stay put.
All the lefties, Cowboy Senior. No lefties changing teams.
Really good
one. Who wants them?
The big ones.
I agree with the two Philadelphia guys. I don't think those guys go in.
But I think Burnett does.
Yes.
All right, great segment, guys, and it's going to be, baseball's heating up now, so make sure you tune in to the forthcoming Sports Lounges, because we're going to really dive deep here on the Thinking Man Sports Podcast at baseballnation.com. So if we go to break, I'll be back with the MMA recap, and I hope you guys have enjoyed the baseball segment.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, well, be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Play Simulation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richer and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Sports Lounge, folks, for our third and final segment here, which is our standard MMA recap. So we are taping this on a Sunday, and last night was UFC Fight Night 46, and pitted a fight that I was looking forward to in a big, 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 big way. I'm sorry, it was not UFC Fight Night 46, it was UFC on Fox 12. Either way, free UFC. I was looking forward to this fight in a big way. Number one contender bout in the welterweight division. We had ruthless Robbie Lawler going up against Matt the Immortal Brown. Lawler coming fresh off a nice victory over Jake Ellenberger after dropping a fight of the year type decision loss to Johnny Hendricks for the welterweight title. And Matt Brown coming in on a 7-fight winning streak of his own. And given these guys' styles, there was no question that this was going to be an absolute slugfest. And, you know, the biggest upset of the night was that this fight went the full 5 rounds. And as fans, we were treated to 5 rounds of just fistic mayhem. Lawler got the decision. Lawler deserved the decision. I had him winning 3-2, 48-47. That's how one of the judges had it. The other two had it 49-46. But I felt like it was a bit wide, didn't give Brown all the credit that he deserved. But the nice thing to see was right after the fight, Lawler gave Brown a big hug and in the interview talked about how much he respected him. Lawler's got dynamite in his hands. No other way to say it. Nobody really stands up with him. I mean, if you do, you're begging to get knocked out. And Brown stood with him the whole fight and took his best shots and kept coming and never stopped trying to win. And I think this is one of those fights that really elevates both guys. Lawler gets the shot at Hendricks. Hendricks is injured right now. And when he comes back, Lawler gets the shot at Hendricks for the belt, the rematch. And I don't count him out of that fight. If Hendricks decides to stand with him again like he did last time, he's looking for trouble. Brown, while on that 7-fight winning streak, had never really stepped up, never been in a 5-round fight, never fought the elite of the elite in the division. And he not only fought Lawler, but he fought him well, and he really helped himself. So if you haven't seen that fight, I'd strongly suggest watching it. Just a great battle. In the co-main event, we had Rumble Johnson. My love for Rumble Johnson has been widely documented here on this podcast. And given that, I was really happy with the result. He fought Little Nog, Rogério Nogueira. A lot of people thought that Little Nog, given how seasoned he is with his Brazilian jiu-jitsu and just how long he's been around, and he's always been a tough out, that he may give Rumble some problems. I couldn't find anybody in my travels that actually picked him to win the fight, but people thought he could give him some issues. And Rumble came out and just blitzed him and just dropped him. And it was just an absolute destruction within a minute. And he's announced himself as a player in the light heavyweight division with the emphatic win over Phil Davis, where he didn't lose a second of the fight. And now this win against Rogério. The light heavyweight division is already stacked, and Rumble is a very welcome addition to that. So again, very much like Lawler, like Brown, if you get the opportunity to watch Rumble Johnson fight, you do it. Because, you know, unlike some other combat sports and unlike some other guys in the UFC, where it's not always the most exciting thing to watch, these guys bring it. These guys bring it, and these guys are looking to take your head off, and these guys don't mind taking risks, and it's a lot of fun to watch. Dennis the Menace, one of my favorite nicknames in the UFC, Dennis the Menace Bermudez, took out Clay Guida. Guida seems to be on the back end at this point. Always a fun guy to watch. If you're not a UFC fan, you might know him as the caveman. He looks like a caveman in there with the long hair. And Bermudez has really been an up-and-comer at featherweight, and he took him out with a rear naked choke and set himself up for some bigger things. So, the other main card fight was a big upset. It was Bobby Green taking the fight on short notice, beat Josh the Punk Thompson. And Thompson's had this happen before in his career, and I think he'll be all right. It was a split decision. It was a tough fight to score. Green vaults himself up in a big way. Huge win for him. I don't think that the loss kills Thompson too much. You know, he's always
He's proven it enough that he's going to be in good fights, and I think Dana doesn't have a problem putting him in with some of the best in the division. So, great night of fights last night. And then, you know, we've been talking a little bit about boxing here on the podcast as well. And there was another guy that if you haven't seen and if you're not familiar too much with the sport, another must-see TV guy fought last night. His name's Gennady Golovkin, or Triple G. He's a middleweight champion. Fought on HBO last night. He's a real, real up-and-comer. It was his first time in the big room at the Madison Square Garden. He had fought in the smaller room before, but he was in the big room last night, headlining the card. Again, he's coming into the fight 29-0 with 26 knockouts, 16 knockouts in a row. So, you know, kind of the anti-Mayweather. If you're not a boxing fan because you don't like see Floyd practice the art of hit and not be hit, then definitely tune in to see Triple G because he is hit and he hits. And he was fighting the best opponent of his career, Daniel Gill, former champion in the division, Australian, very glossy record. A lot of people thought at the very least Gill would be able to take Golovkin rounds. And Golovkin did to him what he does to everybody else. I mean, he knocked him out in the third round, and the way he knocked him out was fantastic. So you have a lot of punchers these days who don't know how to box. You know, they hit like a ton of bricks, but they don't know how to cut off the ring. So, you know, these guys just run away from them and pot shot them, and they just nothing they can do about it for 12 rounds. Well, Golovkin can cut off the ring and trap his man on the ropes, and when he does, watch out, because he will take you out. So the way this fight ended last night was Gil landed his best punch of the fight off the ropes, a big right hand that while Golovkin was getting hit by, Golovkin threw a right of his own and knocked Gil basically out cold. He got up and just said, I can't go on. So they're talking about no one really wants to fight Golovkin. And one of the problems with boxing that we don't have in the UFC is that the best guys don't have to fight each other. And who the hell wants to get in with this guy? I mean, he's an absolute destroyer. One guy who may be willing to is probably considered the third best pound for pound or second best pound for pound fighter in the world, Andre Ward. He's 8 pounds heavier than Golovkin. Golovkin has said he will go up to fight him, so I hope that fight happens. Golovkin called out Miguel Cotto after the fight. Cotto is a newly minted 160-pound champion after his destruction of longtime champion Sergio Martinez. And there's no way in hell that fight happens. Cotto's a small middleweight, and Cotto doesn't need Golovkin. Cotto makes money on his own, and Golovkin would embarrass him and destroy him. So I can't see that fight happening. But next time you turn the dial and you see Triple G, I implore you to watch because he's a lot of fun to watch. As far as UFC, what we have coming up here in the short term, we have UFC Fight Night 47 coming up on the 16th of August. Ryan Bader against OSP, headlining that card. Pretty good light heavyweight tilt. August 23rd, UFC Fight Nights 48 and 49, as they've been doing. One of those, I believe, will be on TV. The other will be on their app. Michael Bisping against Kung Lee from Macau. That should be an interesting fight. Kung Lee, always fun to watch with his kicks. And then it looks like Ben Henderson and Rafael Dos Anjos in a lightweight tilt, which should also be a good fight. But we'll definitely have previews of those cards for you as they come up. So as always, tune in to the Sports Lounge here at Place to Be Nation for all your MMA/boxing needs. The Cowboys got it for you. And hope everyone's enjoyed the show tonight. That's going to do it for us. We'll be back in a week or so. We're going to try to talk Vogel Sr. into becoming a regular here. I thought thought he did a great job, and that's, I'm not even saying that just because he's my dad. Thought it was a great analysis. No first-time jitters. You would never know it, but he has never been on a podcast before, not once. So thanks to Bogle Senior, and thanks to Jeff and Keith, and we'll see you next week. With that, Cowboy out. Are you in the mood to fly to the stars with Jackie Moore? When I say love me, you say sex and love me.